Yakmala! Yakmala! Welcome back to White Dragons, All-American Ninjas, on the, of course, the podcast, Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo! I know we're having a great time doing this. I am Stan Adu, and I am joined, this time I'm going to go the other way. I'm joined by Nick Boxer.
Greetings and salutations!
All right, Jack Hall.
Sup, I'm a 97th Dan.
97th Dan, whoa. That's a pink belt?
Yeah, that's a platinum belt, motherfucker.
Platinum belt. All right, Gentleman Jim, how's it going over there?
I'm good. I'm a Dan the man. Is that a thing?
You're a fancy Dan.
I'm excited to talk about probably the best known out of all the movies we'll cover in this season, the White Dragon season.
Yeah, I mean, this movie, I mean, we told you what it was last week, but this movie is I mean, a big one for us. I mean, this one is Bloodsport. And I heard from Brad. This time he is navigating the wilds of Burbank, but he's not going to be here. Maybe next week. He's going to miss out on Bloodsport.
Burbank has internet. Maybe he could find time to call in sometime.
Well, I don't know. Maybe there's no payphones where he is.
Or he's been banned McDonald's and can't get on their Wi-Fi anymore.
That would suck. That would suck.
So really, so because this is Bloodsport, I want to have this little disclaimer. There is 4 million different lines of trivia. My facts of fury that I have for this film. So I will definitely be dropping a few, but it's way too much to put on this episode. It's also way too good to not someday do. So I propose an off-season special where you guys please don't look up any of this trivia, you other hosts or the listeners, so that we can go over it on some other point and put it out there, because you guys will be amazed.
All right. Well, I look forward to being amazed.
Maybe we could talk. Just use that trivia for American Ninja 2.
Yeah, just from now on, slip in a couple of Bloodsport trivia notes in any episode.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it's a complete non sequitur. It'll work perfectly. All right, Nick, why don't you tell us about Bloodsport?
It would be my great pleasure to tell you about Bloodsport. Frank Dukes runs away from home to compete in the most badass tournament of badasses ever to be held anywhere in the world. And everybody is a badass in this film. And not only do we get to see everyone be a badass, we get flashbacks to tell us why Frank Dukes is a badass. And how he became a badass. I loved everything about this film. It's badass.
You know, this is an interesting one because I think we could almost have done a season just on the Kumite alone, because the event comes up a lot in as you kind of burrow down into the nest of these movies.
So, yeah, for something that isn't real.
It may or may not be real.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's
funny may because, not be but, real, or but, may, it prob- but it may but not. It
yeah, yeah. I love the fact that it's just like, you know, yeah. You've got this Kumite event, which sounds like a great idea for a movie. It is, but yeah, like it's almost become like such a pop culture zeitgeist thing that. You could do a season on it because so many things are like
no doubt about it. This did lead off a bunch of copycats, you know, much like Enter the Dragon, right? Like this led off a lot of copycats on this, you know, formula of including some of the star Jean-Claude Van Damme, and including one that we're definitely getting to at least one before this season is over, of this type of, you know, secret contest. Of different, you know, martial arts competitors.
Yeah, I mean it's so easy when you really get into it. I mean it's a perfect thing for an action movie, especially this kind of thing, because it's like, yeah, let's get a whole crap ton of fighters and make it just like Enter the Dragon, only it's not Enter the Dragon, but it's going to be a whole crap ton of fighters fighting.
There's quite literally not one character in this movie that I don't want to see a movie about.
I mean, I want a movie.
I was just going to say, I want a spin-off movie of the janitor. I love that little dude.
How about those two guys that are at the front, like they decide if you get into the tournament to a certain degree, and then they go hang out by the boss guy who runs the tournament, and it's just like they seem so much more important than they actually are.
I like the two cops, played by Forrest Whitaker, which I refer to as bad cop and interrupting cop. every scene they're in, Forrest Whitaker starts talking, and then the other guy like interrupts him and corrects him.
What a great, type
story there.
I just had to question why Frank Dukes was so important. That they had to send like these two cops after him. Why it was like, oh man, we gotta make sure that Frank Dukes doesn't go to the Kumite because he could die, and he's Frank fucking Dukes, okay?
Fate of nations. Yeah. Fate of nations hanging in the balance.
And like it's like because he's going on a furlough, so I mean it should be totally okay. But I mean now they've got like, really go away? Well, I didn't think so.
Yeah, I mean he says he's going on a furlough, but then he runs away from the commander. So I assume he's actually AWOL.
But apparently they couldn't just place a phone call and say, hey, when this guy shows up with his passport, don't let him on like that. I don't have that technology in 1988.
It's much better that they just sent a couple of guys to look like.
And why are these guys? Aren't these guys cops? Why aren't they like military people going after him? He escaped from the military, or are they military cops?
They're
I don't
CID,
know.
CID, Criminal Investigation Command. So no, it really doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So how awesome is Bloodsport? It's incredibly awesome. It's an unbelievable movie. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to drop one of the facts of Fury, though, this because I think this sums it up. There's a man out there who lists some of his, he gave a list of his 10 or some of his favorite films. Okay. On this list are movies like Citizen Kane, Goodfellas, The Godfather, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, and Gone with the Wind. This was in a New Yorker profile. Where he also said this movie, and this might give a hint as to who it is, this movie is an incredible, fantastic movie. This man then had his son pop in the videotape and watch it the way he usually watched it, which he said was the best 45 minutes. They would just fast forward to the action scenes. That man who lists this movie among the greatest movies of all time with Goodfellas, The Godfather, Good, Bad, the Ugly, Citizen Please Kane.
Don't. I know where you're going. Please don't.
I know. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt.
Donald Trump. one of Donald Trump's favorite movies. It's an incredible, fantastic movie. It's unbelievable.
It's huge. It's huge.
That means there's a decent chance that Bloodsport has been projected on the wall of the White House.
Probably almost daily. And he gets Eric to fast forward to the fight scenes.
I have less problem buying Donald Trump loving this movie than I do the idea of him loving Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, like Donald Trump has ever sat through. Gone with the Wind is longer than this movie. It's longer than 45 minutes. There's no way he ever sat through it.
At a certain point, most people were predicting Gone with the Wind would have been longer than his presidency.
The idea of any list that has Citizen Kane, The Godfather, and Bloodsport. This is the greatest thing I've ever heard in my life. That's how awesome Bloodsport is.
You know what I find even more distracting is I can't figure out what 45 minutes he's talking about.
Fight scenes. Just the fight scenes. Or maybe
the whole movie. The whole movie. The whole movie is the fight scenes. That's all is.
That's not true. There's a flashback scene. The flashback scene, another fact of fury. The flashback scene goes 10 minutes and 56 seconds, making it the world's longest flashback event ever in a film.
Wow. Wow, that is actually really impressive. That's kind of special.
This movie gets more amazing the more you unpack.
And it's not that good a flashback scene. But
Wait, no! The hat that gets damaged in the flashback scene, was it a red cap? Maybe that's where Trump got it.
Could be. Make Kumite great again, yeah.
But you know what? Like one of the things that I find really funny is because I like to look at the Wikipedia and the plot summary because I like to know the things that I missed that usually Wikipedia will help me fill in, you know, because I mean they seem to know some things that I don't. But in the case of Bloodsport, like it's just three paragraphs. There's really not much that you need to know to get Bloodsport. Now, to go back a couple of episodes for American Ninja, it was like eight paragraphs of information, well, and I'm like,
I don't think Nick has given us the summary yet. If anybody needs it, if they're not familiar with this film.
I think he did.
I'm pretty sure
he did give us the summary.
I don't think you did, Nick, did you?
He did. He just didn't say Kumite.
Oh.
I did not... I just called it a badass tournament because that's.
Oh, okay, badass tournament. Oh, yeah. Okay.
I just really wanted the chance to say Kumite several times. That's kind of all I was going for. Yeah, the Kumite.
Kumite.
That's oh man, we need we should do a musical called Kumite.
I'm wondering is if we should change our scoring sheet that we have the octagon to the Kumite. Okay, let's get into the some other amazing moments in this movie. The flashback scene, obviously we've already talked about. How about the fact that we talk about it may or may not be true, that it says it's based on a true story, that pretty much everybody knows that Frank Dukes is a fucking liar.
I like that for you he's a fucking liar.
It's like that's the best way to put it. He's not just a liar. This guy's a con man at the highest level.
I love that his evidence that it does exist is he found two lists that say that it exists. Like it's on like two worldwide all of the events that happen in the world lists, but one, it's supposed to be secret, and two, he could have just put it on himself.
Yes, he did. Because nobody else has ever said they've been in it.
Well, it is supposed to be secret.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Oh yeah, but it's not secret anymore when you make a movie about it.
Well, it's probably not called the Kumite in real life.
Oh, apparently it is. According to him,
Kumite names have been changed to protect
Kumite
the guilty.
Is actually, I guess, an actual, like, I think it's a karate move. So maybe that isn't what it's called. Maybe that's where I'm getting confused. But now it's a tournament.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Frank Dukes. Now, there's a dude that we need to have on the show. Oh.
Well, he'll come on and tell us about how everything he says is true. And yeah, no, he's a character, that's for sure. A Canadian, born in Toronto, but apparently he was in the CIA, according to him, which also may not be true.
No kidding.
Perhaps he was with Jim, who the game show host who was in the CIA as well. Who was that?
Yeah, him. That's right.
Chuck Barris, that's who you're talking about. Chuck Barris.
Yeah, from the Gong Show? Or the Gong Show,
the dating game, the newlywed game.
Wow, Chuck Barris. Yeah, I mean this is he was in the Marines, I guess. I'll give him that. But that's all we know about Frank Duke.
Now we called this season All American Ninjas, White Dragons. And this was actually a way to sneak in a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie because it is a Canadian who says he's an all-American hero who's being played by a Belgian.
Which is one of my favorite things in the movie is that the flashback scene where they show him as a kid. In the movie, not in Frank Duke's real life, apparently he almost sued them for putting this in there. He breaks into this guy's house, who turns out to be this martial arts master, to steal this sword, and the guy ends up training him, right? And they have the kid speaking, and you just know they cast this American kid. And so in order to make up for this, every time this kid talks, you could tell they've dubbed over somebody pretending to be a kid and pretending to be have a French accent, Belgian, because somebody was sitting there going, oh, fuck, that kid's giving a good performance. Hey, is it Van Damme from Belgium? Yep. Can he do an American accent? Nope. Fuck. You just know that's how it went down.
Oh, thank God you're telling me. I thought there was something wrong with that kid.
The voice was a little rough.
Like, it was hilarious. Every time that kid spoke, I just lost it. It was just awesome.
Well, and I mean that is like what, I mean, 10% of the movie.
So yeah, 11 minutes. Yes.
That is an impressive length of time. One of the things that I loved about this movie is that it had lots of great 80s rock and roll music going on. You know, it's got that fantastic, you know, heavy keyboard, heavy AOR sound to it.
Well, and here's another one. Stan Bush does the iconic song in the movie. Stan Bush is best known for The Touch in Transformers. So, I mean, he's you know, the same guy sang that song in the movie. What was it called? Do you guys remember? Hold on here. I have it written down somewhere in my 4 million different.
You look, I want to mention this. Just one of the uses of the music I loved was the cops almost catch Dukes, and he makes a run for it, and it's like a musical chase.
Oh man!
Streets of Hong Kong.
Fight to Survive and On My Own. It was one of those two songs. They're done by Stan Bush, and Stan Bush on the soundtrack though was replaced by somebody else, Paul Delf. Delf was nominated for a Grammy for in the soundtrack apartment for this movie. This movie was nominated for all sorts of awards. Van Damme was nominated for a Razzie for Best Newcomer. He lost it to Ronald McDonald for Mac and Me.
Wow, I can hardly wait to get to that movie.
We're never watching that movie. We do have some standards.
Oh, I don't buy that.
You're right, we have no standards.
Not for an instant. But yeah, the music was great, but you're right, Jim. That scene, that was like straight out of the Keystone Cops right there. You know, like, oh, I'm here, you can't catch me. And then it's like these two, you know, two obviously out of their league CID officers chasing after him. Yeah, that's some crazy stuff right there.
Did they even really want to catch him? I had trouble with like their motivation, really. Like, usually you get that those guys and they're really, really after this guy.
Well, but I do like
in this film, they seem like, yeah, it's a job. We have to do it.
Well, I mean, the thing is,
they
finally do show up at the tournament to get him, and they have like a taser, a Forrest Whitaker. So he, like, you know, disarms them and beats them up. So apparently that's enough for them to just go away. Like,
well, they appreciate that kind of
respect him.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. This movie is so awesome.
It shows your manhood.
The fighters that they have. You talk about them all wanting their own movie. Like, there's so many different, like,
fighter. The sumo. There's the monkey guy. Monkey guy.
The Muay Thai guy.
You got the Arab, the rapist dude.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, totally. And that's Hussein was his name. Yeah, there's so many characters. Like, all the fighters in it.
That dude's,
like,
the most Asian-looking Arab ever.
I know. It's awesome. No, man, the thing is, it's just loaded with those type of, like, the fighters, even though, like, you, even the guys, they don't have any lines necessarily, but you see them, you see their fighting style and the way they dress and the way they act, and you totally get the character.
Oh, it is like Mortal Kombat before Mortal Kombat existed.
Well, and the thing is, the character Johnny Cage is based on Frank Dukes in this movie. He's dressed like him. He uses the nut shot thing, split nut shot move. In fact, that was supposed to be a game starring Jean-Claude Van Damme because of the popularity of this movie. And they couldn't agree on the likeness for him, and they end up turning the game into Mortal Kombat.
Amazing.
Yeah, I know.
And I mean, even small scenes like the video game scene where Frank Dukes meets his best friend.
Oh, I mean, that's like the goal.
That's like the Step Brothers thing. Are we best friends now? I think we are.
Yes, I know. And then he gets beat up by Bolo Young as Chong Li. And then, like, he almost dies. And then, like, a day later, he's fine. And then and then they're in the hospital. And he's like, I love him. And I'm like, he was all upset. And now they're telling each other they love him. That's the Ray Jackson by Donald Gibbs. And I'm like, wait. You guys have known each other like 3 days. Like,
it's a little intense. It's great, though, because it's just like, whenever you need me, I'll be there no matter what.
Donald Gibb is so, like, he's great in everything.
Oh, could he say Full Contact anymore? And awesome. Oh, and some of his lines, like, I'm too pretty. I love him. I love the entire movie. There's
Donald Gibb is great, no question. Like, I love, like, when he's sitting there going, that line that he says that hurts me just looking at it, and then he goes, you better stop doing that when he's doing the splits. You better stop doing that if you ever want to have kids. Like, classic. Donald Gibbs is so fucking great. He's great in everything he did. Like, you could, I don't think there's ever been a movie or show that he's, like, he could, you could film him taking a shit and you'd be like, he's really good in this. Like, he's awesome.
I think Bloodsport is his high watermark because not only is he great, he's in the perfect movie for him.
Bad and Ogre in Revenge of the Nerds.
The Revenge of the Nerds franchise. Yeah, he was in, he was in all of them, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. He's the only guy. Yeah, he's in all of them. But so, like, these two movies, just, he's awesome, though. He is just awesome. He has no fighting style, apparently, whatsoever. But he's big and strong. Oh, man, it's great.
I was going to ask what he, like, everyone else seems to have a gimmick, and he just seems to be a big guy.
He's a big, tough American. That's it. That's his gimmick. It's so awesome.
I'm looking forward to getting to some of the other Bloodsport movies, including Bloodsport 4, The Dark Kumite.
I love that.
Like, what a great name. Like, just in case this one wasn't dark enough for you, we've made it darker. All right. We should get on to scoring this bad boy there, Jim.
All right. I also want to apologize for those who are being distracted by the poor overdubbing of our voices in this episode, much as you would have seen in Bloodsport. All right, so we rate these movies on criteria that are different than objective quality. They are about the enjoyment of the movie. This is a tricky one, though, because the movie might not rate some as high on certain categories. It is a so without saying too much, I want to go into.
I think you're projecting.
I think I'm projecting. So that's why I stopped myself. So our first category is schlock appeal. So that is the silliness of this movie, the schlock feel of it, the B moviness. Stan, why don't you start us?
Well, in all honesty, I think this movie's pretty good. And I remember seeing it when it came out and thinking, wow, this is a really good movie. I mean, maybe I'm not up with Donald Trump and how much I like the movie, but I thought this was a pretty good movie. And after seeing some of the other movies that we're dealing with, Bloodsport seems pretty tame in comparison, but it's got Bolo Young, so I give it some marks for that, but I'm giving it a 4.
All right, Nick.
Wow. I'm blown away by your score. I'm actually going really high on this one. I think this is all schlock. It has like a roster of fighters. It has ridiculous badass stuff happening. You got the splits. I'm going with an 8 on schlock appeal.
Wow. And I match you there, Nick. I'm also an 8 on this for pretty much the exact reason. It's a canon film, so it's got that canon film feel, but they totally embrace it. They know what they are. They make an entertaining B movie, trying to make an entertaining B movie. But to make no doubt about it, those fighters are not realistic fighters. There's a cartoon B movie schlock sheen to this that makes this more fun. It's an 8.
All right. I was also more conservative on this, split down the middle here on, I think because it's fairly linear, I think is the big thing. It doesn't diverge. There's not a lot of wacky stuff in it. So I gave it a 5. So our next category is more heart than budget. So that is how the filmmakers stretch to bring you the most entertainment for their dollar. Stan, let's start with you.
Well, I didn't feel the heart overall. Like it's loaded with feel good moments, but I here's the deal. Unlike Nick and Jack, I didn't feel the same kind of like cheese factor. So I give it a 2.
Oof. Ouch.
All right.
Donald Gibb and Bolo Young, and you don't feel a cheese factor.
I love Bolo, but I know that there's going to be some more Bolo coming up in our lives, and I'm looking forward to that.
I think they use their money effectively. It is the best movie they could make with the tools they had available. 7.
Yeah, I mean, this movie's made for $2 million, and yet it doesn't feel like a $2 million movie. When you compare it to the other movies that we're talking about, like the other movies, the other four movies, they're about the same budget, but it feels much bigger, which is why it made $65 million at the box office, about $15 million domestically and then a lot worldwide, because it feels like a movie that's a bigger budget movie, even though it's not. So to me, that's impressive. And,
yeah, you're watching this, at no time do you feel, I wish they had more money to make this thing.
No, exactly. You never think that, and yet they didn't have much money. Like I say, it's the estimates are anywhere from you hear between 1.5 to 2.7 million are the estimates for the money. So I give it an 8.
All right, I was right in the center there of everyone, and gave it a 5. I think they economized well. I mean they put the money on the screen as far as. You know, it looks like a high quality film. It looks like it might have even been shot on real 35 instead of whatever cheap stock they had laying around. So yeah, I gave it a 5 in this category. Our next one is my favorite category. This is the WTF moments. This is the moments that are the wackiest. The strange thing, the how did this make it into the movie thing. Stan.
Well, I thought that JCVD had some great facial expressions in the movie, like, oh, you know, right up there with the Billy Blanks. That seems to be a nice hallmark of movies that of this ilk. So I really appreciated that. I love the fact that the Army sent the CID to go get him. You know, that was fantastic. You know, I really never figured out why he was so special that they had to, but that's okay. I gave it a 4.
Oh, okay. I can't believe you're rating this so low. I'm going with a 6 on this one. I can't believe that one janitor picking up a gold tooth can outweigh, multicolored ninjas in other films, but I love that freaking janitor, and there's no reason to have that charm in there.
Okay, I give it a 5. It's definitely got it because it's cheesy, but it's not like it's competent, you know? Like usually those WTF, those what the fuck moments to me in these movies are where they put something in and it makes no sense just because somebody thought it would be cool. And you know, and it's like, it's usually done out of incompetence where you go, what am I watching here? And this movie is too competent for that, even though it does celebrate the cheesy. But there is definitely a WTF. To me, it's best summed up by the fact the amount of times he does the splits in this movie, seven splits from John Van Damme. If that's not a WTF, I don't know what is. And there's also the obligatory ass shot of Van Damme in this movie that he was famous for. He pretty much, him and Mel Gibson, pretty much, I think they had it in their contract, even if they were making a G-rated movie. I got to show my ass at least once. Women love it. Women love my ass. So there was absolutely no reason to have that shot, and they did it, and that's a WTF.
So you're going to a seven?
I gave it a five.
A five. I missed that. Nick, I actually missed your score.
I believe I said six.
Six, all right. All right, now we're back on track. The Octagon is back rolling along here. I'm gonna surprise everyone by giving one of the highest ratings I've given in a while. My WTF gets an eight, and it is entirely about two parts of this movie that I will never ever forget, and I have no idea why it's happening, and it makes me confused inside. Chung Lee's boobs is the constant flexing and tweaking of his man boobs every time he gets serious. And also he does this when he wants the audience to cheer for him. He does this up and down motion with his arms that's kind of like He-Man. Like it's like his arms don't go all the way down and they don't go all the way up either, so he kind of has to shake them. Yeah. It was just it's magical. I love it. All right, memorable moments. These are the moments that are iconic, that will stick with you, that will live on in your heart. Stan, start here.
Well, I mean, I remember watching this movie a long time ago, and there are certain things that I still remember from that. Like I remember the guy with the fighter with his hands up. I don't know why that stands out in my mind, but it always does. Bolo, of course, and probably his man boobs. But it's, you know, the fact that this was the first time that I really remember, and I'm sure it probably is the first time I saw JCVD do his splits on chairs. You know, because that, you don't forget that when you see it. But I still gave it a three.
Yeah, I think you're out to lunch on this one.
I think he's crazy. I think he doesn't understand the fucking category.
Yeah. You know, I'm going huge on this one. I'm giving this one, I think this is my first nine of the season. There are so many memorable moments. Every fighter in this, I've assumed I've seen in another movie, just on the strength of, like, one shot. As I said, I love that freaking janitor in the gold tooth. I can remember faces Jean-Claude Van Damme makes before kicks in this movie. Everything is so freaking emotional. It's a great movie.
Yeah, I don't understand how you can give this that low. Like, let's look at it this way. Just from this perspective, Jim Cotta was made around the same time for around the same money. Okay. Jim Cotta is famous for being bad, but to the general populace, if you were to take 100 random people and you're say, tell me some moments from this movie and from this movie, a lot of them wouldn't be able to name much, if anything, from Jim Cotta. But they would remember, they would know two or three Jean-Claude Van Damme things, even if they think it's from another movie that's actually from this movie. Like, this is again, like, we're not going to see movies at this level with this budget from this smaller production company as Canon make the kind of, it's gone. This is lost. We're not going to see these companies make this kind of pop culture, impact that this film made. The splits, the torture device splits, the, the time that he punches the guy in the stomach, when he loses he gets blinded, the look on his face as he looks around for about 7 hours, you know, like everybody.
We haven't even mentioned the DeMarc, the death touch. We have a death touch, and we haven't mentioned it 40 minutes into the show. Come on.
The exploding brick at the bottom explodes out at you. While I watch it, I'm like, I wish this had been in 3D. The kick that he does, where he takes to the air and puts the one leg in like a triangle thing that became the poster, that is iconic. When you think of Jean-Claude Van Damme, that's the move you think of. This is a 9, and that's probably low. This should probably be even higher than that. I just don't understand where Stan's coming from on this. It's not just how it is for you. It's like, to me on this one, it's like partially how it is for you, but for me on this one, it's how much it impacted society. And it really did a lot.
Well, I was going to go with a 7 on this because I agree that there's a lot of very, very memorable things from this film. It gets an extra point because I was going to watch this movie with my wife, who hadn't seen it in years. And I said, these are the movies we got coming up. She said, I want to watch Bloodsport. And before we started watching, she said, my favorite part of this movie is the janitor who finds the gold tooth and then puts it in his pocket and wow. then like bites and then puts it in his mouth before we even started watching. She's like, she probably hasn't seen this in 10 years at least. And that was what came back to her immediately was the janitor awesome. Puts the gold tooth in. So I gave this an 8. All right. Stan, I don't know. You got voted off the island this time. the last category is crazy concept. So that is it's the wackiness of the very idea that this movie exists. Stan, back around to you.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm afraid that I just don't find the concept of. I think we know that it happens a lot coming up, and maybe this is the movie that started it.
Well,
all.
it really but, happened. So I mean. Yeah,
fuck you! It did not happen.
It said it really happened, a true story at the beginning of the film, yeah. And I didn't see any quotation marks.
And then a man named it also said that he was 327-0. 300. Let me tell you something. If you get to 10-0 without having a bad night's sleep, or having an injury, or being stressed about something, or just slipping. Or having a lapse in concentration, that's amazing. 327 is impossible.
It's like he asked someone, what's like a lot in a row? And they're like 30. They're like 30. All right, 300.
Somebody said to him, Marciano won 49 fights in a row, but he had struggled. He like 10 of those, he barely won. And then he goes, 327 sounds good then. Like, fuck you, right, Nukes?
Who see, this is the thing though, right? Since I mean, we don't know who saw this 327. We don't know.
Was he beating up kindergarten kids?
He may have barely won 300 of those. The fact is, I gave it a 2.
A 2 on this category. All right. Nick, how wacky is this?
You know what? I am only going with a 3 because it's not that wacky. I know this didn't start the tournament film. There's been plenty others beforehand, although probably not American. No, this is by the numbers. It just everything else about it is awesome.
Yeah, definitely this lowest. This is the lowest category. It's not that crazy a concept. There's a tournament. He goes to fight in it. And the tournament is everything else that happens around it is what makes it awesome. But like... I mean, if you look at the tournament in Enter the Dragon, and then you look at the subplot in that with, you know, that's all way crazier than this is, as an example. And that was, you know, 15 years before. So, yeah, I mean, this is where it's weak. That said, there is some crazy shit in this concept still. So I'll give it a 4.
All right. And I'm going to come in even lower because, as I said, because it is based on a true story, the pitch is that hard. I think we want to tell the story about this guy who really did all these things. that makes it only as crazy as any other true story. So I only gave this a 2. And that gives us a top score this time. Jack, you are a top dog again. 34 out of 50, followed closely by Nick with 33. I came in the middle there at 28. And Stan did not find the bee in this movie. There's no bee in Bloodsport. I mean, literally there is, but
Bloodsport?
Yeah. I mean, you can't spell Bloodsport without B, but I mean, there is no B to it as far as status.
That is the truth, though. The only B I found in Bloodsport is in the title.
There you go. All right, 16 out of 50 for Stan. Now we have that gives us a big score.
16.
That is
fuck
all.
Fuck you, Stan.
That could be the,
you.
That is the lowest score so far this season.
Wow!
I didn't feel like it belonged, quite frankly. It didn't fit for me like the other
and,
ones.
And I felt that way largely about American Shaolin and American Ninja. I'm going to say this. You guys know, Dudikoff, Michael Dudikoff was the original first choice to star in this, and he did not. He was not cast because he was too tall. He's 6'2". And that's way bigger than Bolo Young. That's almost as big as Donald Gibbs, and for that reason he was not cast in it. But he almost was. How would things be different?
Really, I thought the reason we
wouldn't have seen the splits.
Wait, does Frank Dukes really do the splits? I assume that's also based on real.
I think I believe when he does the splits though. I believe there's the sound of the Kraken being let out.
That's fair.
He calls it the release the Kraken. That's what he calls the splits.
All right. So we do have secret modifiers every season. We have three pluses and three minuses that get applied at this point to give it before we get our final score. This movie has two of these secret categories. It does not get a minus for theatrical release because it was actually a small theatrical release that grew. So it only made like a few million in its first week, and it actually grew significantly as time went on to get to the crazy numbers it ended up at. So it doesn't lose anything for that. It does gain a point for being Jean-Claude Van Damme's first lead role. He had been a bad guy in No Retreat, No Surrender, but this was his first starring role
Facts of Fury, you want it or not?
Yeah, give it to me.
All right, because you know he had actually been in movies in Europe first. His first facts. Pardon me?
I'm glad we stopped for this.
Yeah, you're welcome. I asked you if you wanted it.
I did.
Well, we assumed that you had it like on the tip of your tongue, ready to go.
Well, I told you I have so many of these. It's okay. All right. So his first American film role was in Cannon Films. He was actually in another Cannon film. He was in Breaking. He was one of the background street dancers. He has studied ballet for 5 years, so that's probably why he could do that. But his first film role was in a movie called Monaco Forever, where he played Gay Karate Man.
Nice.
All right.
It took me a while to get to it, but you have to admit it was worth it.
That's good, yeah. And if you check on YouTube, you can find this 30-second clip of Jean-Claude Van Damme being the training assistant for Chuck Norris.
Yes, he was.
This really short clip.
Stunt department for Missing in Action. They had become friends. He was actually a bouncer at Jean-Claude Van Damme was a bouncer at the bar Woody's, I think it was called, that Norris owned, and they sparred together some. So
that's Brad's favorite movie, Missing in Action.
Is it?
No kidding.
Yeah, he's a big Norris fan. We get another point because there is a Asian or Asian American stunt coordinator. Ka Ting Lee was a prolific actor, particularly in Hong Kong film, with 77 IMDb credits. So very prolific. So that brings us to a grand total of 57.5 out of 100. Very respectable numbers there, despite being dragged down by one host who wasn't super generous with us. So a pretty respectable number, though. So we will continue to gather. Every episode, we'll be adding these movies to a list on our website, wetalkpodcasts.com, where you can keep track of our search for the ultimate B-movie.
All right. And what's that Instagram?
Follow us on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, and also use the hashtag Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo and talk about the B movies, the drive-in movies, the VHS movies, whatever movie you love that has more heart than budget.
Okay, and before we go out on this one, I have one other facts of fury that really sums up how full of shit Dukes is. Now I just want to know, do we want it or do we want to save it for the trivia show?
Do you actually have it? I think
I do fucking have it. Yes.
Go for it.
Okay. This is a quote from Frank Dukes, who was friends with Jean-Claude Van Damme until he sued him, but Dukes has sued everybody. So that's no big deal. But they also had some moments where weren't the friends. Jean-Claude and I went at it for real one day on set. Both of us real mad. I told him to meet me on the roof of the Victoria Hotel and I'll show him who's a champion. We met there, 60 stories up, and I stood on this section that was no wider than 18 inches. I told him we'd fight right there. Then I did a full rotation kick and stared him down. You could see his heart fall in his chest, and he said, "Frank, you're crazy." After that, we went to dinner, and he never raised his voice to me again, not even when I took him to court.
That is awesome.
Frank Dukes is a superhero.
He's great.
He's the
Hulk Hogan of mixed martial arts, just full of shit.
He is awesome. Well, you know, here's the deal. You know, like, White Dragons continues next with Ninja 3, The Domination. And while I haven't seen it yet, I have a sneaking suspicion that my scores are gonna rise up a little bit for that one. So I am definitely looking forward to it. But
how could they not?
We're gonna... I know. I don't want to talk about it about what I've read because it's too crazy. So I look forward to coming back. I hope all of you look forward to coming back. I am 8th Dan, Stan Adu, and for Jim, Jack, Nick, and of course Brad, this has been another episode of Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!